The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You're listening to the Best Morning Routine Ever podcast, the show that proves no one stumbles upon success ever. With your host, Lou Need. Every Mondays and Thursdays, we deliver cold hard evidence behind the power of a robust morning routine. Get ready to be transformed by the renewal of your mind.
Hello, morning enthusiasts. Welcome to the Best Morning Routine Ever podcast. I have an extraordinary guest with me today, but first, let's talk about what does the letters R-E-S-P-E-C-T mean to you anyways? What does it look like in school, corporations, and in the military? For our next guest, Mike Dormish, respect is his personal mission. You see, when he was 19 years old, his sister, Cherry, was raped. From her strength and courage of being a survivor, Mike became inspired to speak out and make a positive impact. Morning enthusiasts, I have the honor of introducing a wonderful guest today, the founder of the Center for Respect. He is an internationally renowned speaker and critically acclaimed author. Mike provides specific how-to skills so each person at all levels of an organization can implement immediately for building a culture of respect. Preparation and mastery of the material has earned him the credibility and trust within special operations across the Department of Defense. Mike founded the Date Safe Project, which conducts training for tens of thousands of people each year. Today, small and large companies and associations are turning to Mike to help them do what he has done for universities and the U.S. military, and that is to create a culture of respect throughout the organization. Mike, welcome to the show.
Hello. Thank you for having me on, Lunid.
It is my pleasure. I'm looking forward to hearing all about the organization. We'll talk about today sexual harassment, sexual assault in the workplace and within the military, and also how to create a culture of respect in these entities.
Absolutely. Looking forward to the discussion.
Okay. So tell us about actually what inspired you. And I know it was about your sister early on and how that motivated you and actually gave you a mission, a purpose.
Yes. Well, at the time I was a university student and I was studying and I received a phone call from my mom about my sister being raped. And I couldn't believe what I was hearing. I was enraged. I was angry. I was confused. I was hurt. And I really lost my way for a little while. And I transferred back home to a university near home to be there during the trial. And then I heard a speaker while I was at college. And I thought, hey, wait, I could do something about this. I could use my voice. And so when I was around 2021, I started speaking out on the local university campus and then in local schools. And it grew from there. And that's where it all began. And now we're 28, 29 years into the speaking.
Wow. 28, 29 years. So you started back into college while you were still in.
Correct. While I was still in. Started working at that time in classrooms with the local schools and at the university I was at.
Wow. And did that birth the Date Safe Project?
Yeah. So what is now the Center for Respect began as the Date Safe Project. So it was originally the Date Safe Project. And then this past year, we renamed because we do so much work with corporate, military, and others. We do a lot of work outside of the dating intimacy experience. We do that in those realms also. So we realized we needed to update our organizational name. And so we became the Center for Respect instead of the Date Safe Project.
Mm-hmm. So branch out and diversify and be able to work with the DOD.
Yes. Well, and we've been working with the Department of Defense for now over 12, actually, we're going on 14 years. We've been working with military installations for that long. And so it's just a matter of we realized, hey, we need an organizational name to represent what we do more accurately. And so that's why we made the shift to the Center for Respect, because everything we do is focused on respect, whether it's sexual violence or whether it's disrespect in the workplace or whether it's creating a culture of respect in an organization or in a business or in a school, in a community, or in the home.
So sexual assault has been a pervasive problem in the United States, but also within the military. And it has received extensive media coverage over the past several years. So how do you go in and help with this image?
Well, what we do is they don't bring me in to solve an image. They bring me in to solve a problem. So for them, this is much more than an image. The people I work with truly deeply want to reduce sexual violence from happening. And that's true on university campuses and military. The military's numbers are not worse overall than a university campuses. It's just there's different expectations that our society tends to have. They're both need improvement. And people will say that on both ends. If you were to talk with university people, you talk with military people, they'll say, we want this to be better. We want to have way, way less of this happening. And so they bring me in to provide solutions that can change the culture, transform the culture into one being based on respect instead of on how do I get some? How is it about me going out and getting more? And it becomes so self-focused that you're not making sure that your partner is on the same page as you. Therefore, you don't have consent. And we've got sexual assaults occurring because one person is forcing themselves on or not even checking before they start to do something. They're just doing it. And our culture taught that. The military wasn't responsible for teaching that to a kid when they were 15. Neither were universities. They were taught that when they were 10, when they were 12, when they were 14, when they were 16, watching TV, movies, listening to friends, hearing how other people's sex lives worked. So we're coming in and saying, hey, let's have a new conversation. Let's talk about how to do things the right way.
So how does that transcend into organizations? What do you find biggest difference is when you're talking in front of audiences for the military, for the corporations, and versus school?
Well, let's start with school. So at schools, it's an age-appropriate discussion. If I'm talking to a middle school, that's going to be different than talking to a high school, where you have in one area you have 12-year-olds, but another area you have 16, 18-year-olds, and 15-year-olds, and 14-year-olds. So you alter the conversation. What we're doing is giving them skills at that age to make the best choices possible based on a foundation of respect. So if it's high school students, we're talking about how to make sure you never do anything with a partner without your partner fully being able to consent to that, talk about what they're comfortable with, that you're not doing anything before you're of legal age to be doing that, that you're following your own beliefs, and that you're not doing anything you don't want to do. Like, there's no pressure. You shouldn't have to feel coerced or that you owe this to someone. Now, when we get into college and universities, we might be talking about even more advanced sexual situations and relationships and what's happening in the one night stand or what's happening in different situations at bars and parties that some schools aren't comfortable talking about yet. We might have that in the college and university discussion. When we get to military, take everything we just said and now add on adult mature relationships. So we're talking about long-term relationships, marriage, sex and marriage, how do you treat your partner? So we go everything from a one-night stand of two single people to two people who've been married 30 years, and how do each situation, how are you making sure it's founded in respect and consent and mutuality, and it's fun at the same time? That's key to this, right? It should be fun. Now, shifts of companies and corporations, totally different conversation. Completely different. There, what we're doing is we're walking in and we're saying, what are ways that all of us see disrespect occur in the workplace every day? Mm-hmm. Subtleties that nobody's talking about. So this isn't necessarily sexually specific, sexual harassment, sexual assault. It could be any form of disrespect. For instance, Lenny, if I were to interrupt you while you were talking, that's a form of disrespect. It's done a ton in the American workplace, a ton. And we all can fall into the trap of doing these things. I do that sometimes. So what we do is we help ourselves catch where we disrespect and then say, what if we did this one action instead right there? And we give the corporate atmosphere, the businesses, alternative options that are based in respect that everybody can do every day. And if you do these 9 things, if you do them, we won't have problems of sexual harassment, sexual assault. We won't have problems of discrimination. We won't have problems of major corporate issues that where there's a failure of respect, because we'll be founded in respect in our everyday action.
Mm-hmm. And the I can see how it's a gray area with organizations, because it doesn't have to be assault right off the bat. And you're right, it is on an everyday interaction.
Yes. Look, there are so many different ways. It could be the person in the team of the office who comes in and just bulldozes the conversation. Like, this is what's going to happen. Here's what's going to happen. Now, what do you all think? And they're not really there to hear what anybody else thinks. They just want to hear compliments. They just want to hear go. And so it's very disrespectful, because you're asking me for my opinion, but you don't care about my opinion. So that's another way. And these 9 ways of disrespect that we teach, when you bring them forward, the whole room, especially whether I'm talking to CEOs or people on the ground floor, they're all like, oh my gosh, I've done that. Absolutely. Or I have people on my team who do that. How do we help make that transformation so that doesn't happen anymore? People, human beings as a whole, want to do the right thing in life. The problem is we have failed to give people actual skill sets for living with respect. We unfortunately, the entire lifetime of people say things like, just do the right thing, be respectful. And you never teach how, or how you're not being respectful, so that we can become aware of this and make better choices.
And do you find it you're teaching a lot of EQ, emotional intelligence, tactics, and skill sets with the 4 organizations?
Absolutely, yes, because it's a matter of listening and paying attention. And a lot of emotional intelligence is exactly that. Are you aware of how your words are impacting, not just what your intention is? Right. That's what emotional intelligence is much about, is this idea that if I say this, it's not just my intention, it's how it's actually going to be heard, felt, and experienced by others. And am I able to listen to them in a way that I understand their emotional intelligence and that I can really take that in?
Mm-hmm. What are some, because EQ is just not being aware of your own emotions, but other people's emotions.
Correct.
Being able to assess them and see it and be sensitive enough to adapt and adjust, especially if you want to be heard, if you want to get buy-in by your team members.
That's what's nice about these 9 steps that we teach, the 9 forms of respect instead of disrespect, is that let's say that you're not somebody high on emotional intelligence levels, right? That you struggle there. You struggle to read other people's emotions and situations. Well, if you use the right approaches to respect, you're going to be much better in those moments, because it won't be about you having to read. It'll be about you being patient and letting them be heard. And so it takes some of the pressure off of people who struggle to read others, because it gives them a skill set they can use in that moment that avoids them from coming off as cold or not caring, because it's teaching them how to be patient, how to listen, that slowly can strengthen that emotional intelligence.
I can imagine it's not a one session method.
No, well, that's the nice thing about this. What we teach, when they bring me in, let's say a company brings me in, it depends on how they want to do it. Some will bring me in for a keynote and we teach those 9 steps, right? And then they implement them every day. Like, they'll say, hey, for 9 out of the next 10 days, we're going to pick one of these actions. We're all going to work on Monday's going to be this one. Tuesday's going to be that one. And they do that for 9 days. And then they put it on a rotation. So every month you go through the rotation twice. So they're living it as a company. And you need to be able to do this. If you're going to be a company that says respect is something we deeply believe in, well, then I need to see it in your company actions. See, too often companies put words like respect in their core values.
Yeah.
But it doesn't show up anywhere in their daily routines as something that they are focused on. It's just assumed that everybody's respectful, which we're human beings. So there's going to be acts of disrespect in there. So you have to be very intentional about this kind of work.
Yeah, and it becomes white noise if it's not applied or utilized or reiterated on a daily basis.
Yeah, it becomes nice in theory is what it becomes. People will walk out and going, that's nice in theory. And that's why who presents them information becomes important. You need to be able to have a presenter, a speaker, an expert, an author who can ignite the room on a personal level so that everybody walks out going, I can't wait to be living this right now. I'm not waiting till tomorrow to do it. I'm not waiting an hour to do it. I am now hearing myself and I'm transforming who I am right now. But you got to get to the personal deep level with a room for that to occur. Mm-hmm.
So what are, if you don't mind sharing, what are the some of the 9 forms of respect?
Yes. So examples, here's just a few because we couldn't get through all 9, right, to be honest with you, because they're so detailed. All right. So what you look at is you look at in moments of interaction. What are ways that people can feel disrespected? All right. So a very common one is to actually dismiss. All right. So you share something with me and I roll my eyes, or I say, yeah, but as soon as you say, yeah, but you're telling me that my idea is not going to work. And once again, all of us do this. So I've done it. Right. So, and I've had to learn where I do that. So I get better at it. So instead of saying, yeah, but okay, how would that work? Right. That's a very different approach. Like if my mind says that's not going to work, then I need to say, all right, ask and engage. How would that work? So that's a good example of instead of totally dismissing them, engaging and asking more. Right. That now makes somebody feel valued. You might not use my idea. You might not. But at least I know you truly considered it and you gave it a shot versus if I walk in and you go, yeah, but I didn't even count in that moment. And we don't want to do that to people. Now, completely different form of disrespect is I come into your office and you're looking at your screen while I'm talking to you, right? And you're saying, and you're distracted. And this is literally what it's called, distracted. It's a form of disrespect. And I'm trying to share something with you and you might look up at me quickly, but it's just to give me a little nod and you're back on your screen. The screen is more important. Right. And we've all seen this in the cell phone world. We can fall trapped to it. We're in a conversation with someone. Our phone buzzes and we look at the phone as if that phone buzzing was a life-changing emergency because I must interrupt your value and your time, your ideas to look at. Right. And it's really degrading. So in those moments, instead of being distracted, we want to be patient and focused. No matter what's going on, I'm looking at you. No matter what's being said, I'm listening to you. And when I catch myself trying to distract, I go, let's come back. It's much like you would teach in meditation. Ideas will come into your head when you're meditating. You won't just have silence, but you keep coming back to your focus point. That should happen when you're with a human being and having a conversation. If I get distracted, bring it back. Bring it back. They're my focus. Right. So these are little examples. I'll show you one last one that is very common, too, that we're starting to see nowadays is denying access. And people, what do you mean deny access? Well, there are people now that are operating in fear of doing something wrong. So they'll say things like, well, you know what, with everything going on with Me Too and Time's Up, I'm just not going to have professional business dinners alone with a woman. But wait a second. You will with a man? Well, yeah, of course I would with a man. So why wouldn't you with a woman? Well, I don't want to be accused of anything. All right, well, let's just hold on a second. So men get access to you in a way that women do not get access to you professionally. You're like welcoming a discrimination lawsuit. And they're like, yeah, but it's different. I go, so yeah, here's what's different. You're saying to everybody in your organization that women are untrustworthy, manipulative, and dangerous, that they might falsely accuse you of something. But all the men are safe, wonderful, trusting people who would never misconstrue anything you said at a dinner. Mm-hmm. That is a massive problem. So instead of denying access, how do I bring everybody into the equation as fairly and as equally as possible?
Well shared. Thank you for sharing that because it making a lot of sense now that I'm hearing you speak. Like the whole distraction part and not being present, and the phone does ring and people get distracted or looking at instant messages in the middle of a conversation or picking up a phone call in the middle of a conversation. That is right out disrespectful.
Oh, absolutely.
They don't see it that way. They just see, I'm multitasking, or they're just looking for something more important than you, something more urgent than you.
I'm multitasking. What they're saying is I'm trying to listen to you while I'm trying to do these two other things. Well, stop trying to do four and focus on this one conversation.
Yeah. And I like how you correlate it to meditation, because we do drift in meditation. The point is not to just be still, but to actually increase that muscle of awareness.
Correct.
Bringing it back makes very total sense. And then when you talked about denial access, another way I can see this working is withholding information. One, for job security. I don't want to lose my job, so I'm not going to share information because I want to be wanted or be needed. Withholding valuable information that can actually help.
Yes. Running in a scarcity mindset instead of a prosperity one.
Yeah. I can totally see that happening in the workplace. So for you, what feedback do you get that this is actually working after your presentations? Because you're gone, you leave them with the 9 steps, and then they're implementing it outside of you. And when do you hear back that it's actually helped the organization, the culture, to improve?
So it depends on how we're working with an organization. It could be that I'm doing a keynote, and right there at the event, we have them give us feedback. We have a survey they can do on their phones. And it's not a survey of, did you like the speaker? How do you score the speaker? It's a survey, what am I going to use after today? And how am I going to implement this in my life? So we're actually measuring the implementation that they plan on doing, which is really, really the key, right? And that's what we want to know. So then it depends on what happens after that. If a company is saying, hey, we want this to be the beginning, and now we want to bring you in after so many months to follow up and dive deeper with us. Well, now, obviously, we're going to have a system in place, right, that we continue to teach this and instill it. The other way we do that is the company to give us feedback, to say, hey, and we had this happen recently. I was in a room of 33 CEOs, and they said, I had somebody already reaching out to me within a day or two. Oh my gosh, I already caught myself on a couple of these before I did them, and I altered my behavior, and it's making me a better leader, a better person. So we get actual examples of people reaching out going, here's how this has changed me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you are tackling a big issue, and I love what you're doing, talking with the schools, and not just college level. You're going to high school and now military and into organizations, because this is a huge need.
Yes. Well, yeah. And when it comes to those relationship issues, consent and respect is really the focus of what we talk about there. It's just a misunderstanding, a sad one, and I don't mean just, of how education addresses this. See, what education tends to think is, what do we need to tell the kids not to do? And the problem is they do not teach what to do. So if you're only telling me what not to do, what do I do with that? Right? We tell people all the time, if you know the sport of football and you coach football, you never tell a running back don't fumble, because you gave them a negative. What do I do with a negative? You tell them, hold on to the ball. That's what you tell them, because that's a positive. So when you're going to talk to kids about dating, sex, relationships, intimacy, how-tos are you giving them? Are you giving them the skills to help recognize when I'm not comfortable, when I am comfortable, what I want, what I don't want, how to use my words to talk about my body and my wishes and my wants and my desires? That's consent. And so it's not being taught. People go, well, we teach our kids they need consent, but you don't give them any skills. So they walk out and they go, oh, I know what consent is, but they don't. And they even admit it when you teach them the skills. They're like, wow, we never, ever, 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 ever heard anything like this. Because I'll speak to university students and they'll be in shock. They'll be like, wow, we were never taught this. We were taught the definition of consent, that we had to have consent, but we were never given skills to actually make it reasonable and realistic to do.
It was never taught growing up. It's almost like we're told to focus. We're told to concentrate, right? And no one has actually sat us down as a young child to tell us how to focus, how to bring the awareness back, how to concentrate.
Yes.
All that gets lost, and I'm so glad that this is being thought, and just conversations being had, because it's really important for our safety. So tell us a little bit about your morning routine. How do you get up, dress up, and show up to do what you do, Mike?
Well, I have such an erratic schedule compared to most people in their lives, and what I mean by that is, it really depends on the time of the year, my schedule. So I'll give you an exact example. The last 2 weeks, I've been home for 24 hours. And every other day has been in a different city every day. And most of those are flying every day to those cities, landing, speaking, getting up at 4 or 5 in the morning, get on another flight, fly to another city. So my routine is not what it would be at home at all, because the schedule doesn't allow that with sleep and all for that to happen. So I have to come up with multiple versions of my morning routine. One is at home. At home, my ideal morning routine, and I say ideal because being honest, it doesn't always happen. But my ideal is that I get up and I go out on the lake. We have a small lake near us. I go out on my kayak and I meditate out in the middle of the lake. And that is my place of serenity. There's no one on the lake, maybe a fisherman somewhere, but that's about it. And it's like you're in your own world. And I'll meditate. I'll go into a 20-minute meditation and I'll just take in nature and I'll ride around the lake and just really focus. I'll come in and I'll do a little bit of journaling, a little visualization. And so I believe a lot in the Miracle Morning book, huge believer of the Miracle Morning. It's such an, it'll teach everybody something to do with their morning that works for them. And I follow his formula, which includes exercise. So I try to get my exercise in the morning so that that awakens my body and my mind and puts me in a whole different energy space.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The Miracle Morning by Hal Erold is a good read. And I recommend it to my listeners all the time. And he has a 6-minute hack that he does for your morning. And he goes into, you know, minute one, silence. Be purposefully silent, which is essentially what you're doing when you are up by the lake and meditating and taking in nature.
Absolutely. Yeah. And then you have the A for affirmations. And I have an actual document that I read for my own personal affirmations that I've made. He gives examples in the book. I've added to mine over the years and edited my mind in an ongoing affirmational journal that I read. And so then he has V, it's savers. You just have to remember S-A-V-E-R-S, savers. Yeah. And then the V is the visualization I talked about. The E is the exercise. The R is the read. And the S is scribing, which really means journaling, journaling or writing. And so, look, I don't always get in all 6. Some days I get in 3. Some days I get in 5. Some days I get in 2. But it's at least doing some of that, getting into that rhythm that can set the day upright, my mind upright, my mind is one of those that moves a million miles a minute, which there's a lot of wonderful to, but that can also create some struggles too. So following that can help set the mind up the right way.
Yeah, setting up the day right sets the tone. The first, you know, they say 6 to 8 minutes. Doctors have proven what you do in those 6 to 8 minutes will set the tone for the rest of the day. And I'm hearing across the board, Mike, entrepreneurs, they're doing the savers. They're taking the time to themselves. They're saying affirmations out loud. There's visualization that's taking place because you want to know where you're going and you want to be intentional about where you're going and what you want tomorrow to look like.
Absolutely.
So I thank you so much for sharing and looking forward to getting on your website. So tell us, how can we connect with you?
So anybody can connect to me at centerforrespect.com. You'll see everything there. There's a lot of ways to contact us, a phone number, social media. Now, if you want to find me on social media, we're facebook.com/centerforrespect, youtube.com/centerforrespect. If you want to find me on Instagram, that is /MikeRespects. So Mike Respects. My last name is very difficult to spell, as you know, Lenny. And so I go with Mike Respects. I also have a personal page on Facebook, not just our company's page, which is also Mike Respects. So you can find me at Mike Respects on Facebook or Mike Respects on Instagram.
Mike, thank you so much for sharing. It's been a pleasure having you on the show. And listeners, this is how you connect with him. I will, of course, go right ahead and rate the show. Let us know how great of an episode this was. Mike, I thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you. And you have an awesome day. And I appreciate you and your listeners.
Absolutely. You as well. Have a great day.
Thanks. You too.
Bye-bye.
Well, all right, morning enthusiasts. That's it for today's show. Thank you for tuning in. If you love the Best Morning Routine Ever podcast, we'd love to hear from you. So go ahead and subscribe, rate, and give a review on iTunes or Google Play. While you're at it, tell a friend about the show. Be sure to visit bestmorningroutineever.com and our Facebook group to join the conversation. access the show notes and discover our fantastic free bonus content. Until next time.
Some people might say coffee doesn't need chocolate, but you're not some people. You're a dreamer. You see the possibilities of chocolate and caramel flavors swirling together with cold brew, topped with velvety chocolate cold foam and cocoa caramel crumbles. That imagination can only be rewarded with Dunkin's new caramel chocolate cold brew. It's a cold brew dream come true. America runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer. Terms apply.